cliffcentral.com.
Tones and I, Dance Monkey, and that song is currently number one in the world. Can you believe that? 277 million views. Pumi knew this song. You did. I saw you singing along with it now.
Again.
You can't escape this.
If you've been under a rock for the whole year this year.
Oh, that's a big claim.
You won't know that I live with a 12-year-old boy.
Oh.
Every one of these annoying songs is part of my life's routine.
And most of them he gets from?
TikTok.
Now, TikTok is something which all the other social media sites and apps and businesses are starting to take some notice of, because it's growing faster than all of them.
As they should. It is now the third most downloaded app after Facebook and WhatsApp.
Right. Mm.
It is so funny what goes viral and successful and what doesn't.
But the thing is, it only launched. So it's a Chinese app and it's got a Chinese name.
Like an old person who's out of touch. But fuck is TikTok?
But it literally launched into the West, the Western part of the world last October or something.
Okay.
And it has... It's short videos. It's short videos. It's like YouTube when it started, and it's all sorts of annoying young people making like whatever.
It reminds me of Vine again.
It's like 60 Vine? Seconds of Vine. A thing, you know, like they're playing jokes on each other. They're miming stuff. They're dancing. It's 60
and
seconds and then it's gone.
Somehow that has become this massive success.
It's not somehow. There was a big concerted effort. They were spending a million US dollars, like in advertising and so advertising and influence, paying content creators and all of that kind of stuff. $1 million, literally a day.
My God.
Holy
for
hell.
A good 6 months. They had the biggest... So at the... Is it... Facebook... big. They have a big creators week of all their content creators from all over the world. They come through. But all the social media companies have people there and they have parties. And TikTok had the biggest party at somebody else's gig.
Who's behind TikTok? Do we know?
China.
Yeah, that could be a lot the government.
Of money.
It could be anyone. Very interesting.
You always have to keep your eye on things like this, because over the weekend I was watching an interview that it was more like a panel discussion. Kim Kardashian was part of. The New York Times was putting it together. And they were talking about, yes, content creation and different types of content marketing. And Kim very nonchalantly just puts it out there. She says, well, you know, and the question posed to her was,
I've got something to say.
And I'm an equal lover and equal hater. And it's not necessarily hating on her. I will admit I'm actually jealous on this front. The question was along the lines of how she decides what sort of sponsored posts or she does, and she just very nonchalantly states, well, I just look at what I want to spend and then I decide. When like I have $1 million, I decide what do I want to spend it on. So you can basically discern that she gets offered $1 million a post to not get off her chair, to not do anything, post. It is $1 million. It is. I can't even wrap my head around that.
Yeah,
it's insane.
And remember, she's just the tip of the iceberg, because there's people who are charging like $500,000, and then there are people at $200,000, and then there are people at $50,000. And some of these people we've never even heard of.
Yeah.
And they're earning this kind of money. It's insane.
Here's another thing you can just roll your eyes at with trying to understand. She also admitted that there was a time when she was offered to do a sponsored post by this fashion brand that did a lot of Yeezy knockoffs, and Yeezy being her husband's fashion label.
Right.
And they had this conversation with Kanye, and Kanye ultimately said, you know, I'd appreciate it if you didn't because they're kind of just knocking off my own brand. And she understood that. So for the next Mother's Day, or was it Christmas? I can't remember. Kanye gifted Kim an envelope. She opened up the envelope and she got a check for $1 million. And that's just, you
from
know,
from her husband.
From her husband saying, girl, I appreciate the fact that you I got my back. Here you go. Here's $1 million that you would have got for that.
So, I mean, you know, those numbers are like unthinkable. And there are people probably listening who don't even know how to write the number out, like in digits.
No.
And Facebook last year made $16 billion out of advertising.
That's unbelievable.
Zuckerberg for the win.
Like Google and Facebook.
Oh, he's saying that himself.
A fascinating little statistic from a book I'm reading. We're reading this thing about platform businesses and mega monopolies. Google and Facebook dominate 2/3 of the digital advertising world. 2/3.
Yep.
Google and Facebook. Apple has captured 90% of the world's profits in smartphones. The profit in the smartphone world.
90% of it belongs to Apple.
So, but have a look at, I don't know if you've seen the case that's happening. They're trying to make sure to keep an eye on guys like Google, because there's obviously a bit of a problem there, even if you're for the free market. They're trying to what they did at the end of the 19th century in America to try and break up, you know,
the
big monopoly. So they're going after Zucks and the guys at Google at the moment.
Yeah, that's this book, Mega Monopolies, what it's called.
So it's very, very interesting right now.
Well, speaking of
modern monopolies,
speaking of the monopolies closer to home that we have to deal with, SAA. I mean, it's just amazing how clueless SAA management are of their current situation. They don't actually know. Every single one of their domestic flights costs 40% more than their closest competitor, and their international flights aren't much better. The decision to pay staff whatever increase they've asked for has now been approved. These are staff who probably won't have jobs in about 6 months from now, because this business is going to go under. And if it doesn't go under, it's going to be bailed out by guess whom? The taxpayers, against our will.
Dude, talk about left hand, right hand.
Yeah.
Did you see the press release from Pravin Gordhan on Sunday night?
Tell us.
Press releases on Sunday night.
What time as well? Did they make sure that we're...
That's very Jacob Zuma administration. But let's not forget, Pravin was part of that administration. So what did he put out?
About the radical restructuring that is going to be happening at SAA. This is literally 3 days after a strike was averted because Tito Mboweni agreed to the price increases. So like Tito on the one side says, the finance minister says, okay, we'll find the money, we'll make this happen, get back to work. And 3 days later, the Minister of Public Enterprises says, I'm restructuring this whole thing. People mustn't think they're getting away with nonsense here.
But they are, Pravin. They just are. Anyway.
Tito and Pravin sit at the same NEC meetings?
I think they used to, yes, that's correct. Now, here's something interesting. And I know this is, for some people, old news because it's like a week late. But this is the cost that people don't seem to be able to factor in when they work in government. So Flight Centre, who do a ton of bookings for people who are doing all kinds of travel all over the world, Flight Centre Travel Group and travel insurance consultants have taken steps as the insolvent airline SAA seeks up to $2 billion to continue trading. Apparently, what Flight Centre and one of the other big travel insurance consultants groups have decided to do is exclude the ailing airline from its travel supply insolvency benefit, according to travel industry. This is, in other words, a private company that's decided this is too much of a risk for them to take. And private businesses, through whom a lot of people do their bookings, will now increasingly decide not to use SAA. Now, you imagine you've booked your travel for December through SAA. These guys are not going to offer you insurance if SAA cannot deliver on their promise.
So if you've checked that little box that says, cover me?
Yeah. Sorry, doesn't count.
That box doesn't exist anymore.
I don't blame them.
TIC is owned by Suntum Insurance. And the cost of this, obviously, in the long term, is that bookings are going to go down. So Praveen says to us, no, 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 we must support SAA. You must keep booking on SAA. Are you going to?
No. No. But once again, Garrett, this comes back to what I was saying earlier, right? Is as the public, and I'm speaking for myself, if I trusted my administrators at government level to administrate, so people in Switzerland, you know why they don't mind handing over a lot of power to the government? Because they trust that the administrators will do what they have to do. We do not. Mm-hmm. And here we go. These what is the travel company saying is, we don't trust, what they're really saying is not about SAA. We don't trust the government to hold it together. And if you don't trust your government, it's a shambles. Capitalism doesn't work when the state apparatus does not
Nothing
work.
Nothing works when the state apparatus doesn't work. Certainly no other system either. Anyway, it's just interesting to see because this story is getting worse and worse for SAA. Poor SAA.
Do we really feel all too bad for
them? Well, you know, there are good people at SAA. I've met lots of people who are cabin people, cabin crew people who are pilots. There are people who are trying to do their level best to keep this thing afloat, and they've done a good job. I have to admit, every time I've ever it's management that's the problem.
Have you ever heard of an SAA flight falling out of the sky?
No.
No.
And
I've only experienced bliss when flying SAA.
They
as
have
well.
One job, get you? No. I mean, there's.
And the people who are actually doing the work,
Singapore Airlines,
are not bad people. Don't want them to lose their jobs, and I don't want them to go out of business. I've probably been delayed a handful of times in 25 years of flying SAA. And, you know, we've got to be reasonable about this. We now are turning our backs on this organization because they've been managed into the ground by a succession of terrible boards, terrible middle management. But the people on the ground have tried their level best to keep the thing going.
Gareth, you're being very kind by saying managed.
Well,
yeah, that's very kind to call this chamors. We're in the Moile Gate now.
Yeah, exactly. In a little while, we're going to speak to Victorian Kadimeng, who is a listener to Blind History. And we thought we'd just chat to her. She reached out to us to give us a glimpse of how her life is her version of a Blind History episode. So we'll get her on later on. It's really interesting. Vodacom and MTN, as we said earlier, have to reduce their data prices immediately. The Competition Commission says the two telecom giants could reduce their prices by as much as 50% and should, or else they're going to prosecute them. But as Pumi has pointed out,
might not happen.
Count your chickens.
Shame. Well, look, we started the hour discussing some tech news, so let's just carry on with that. Here's something to keep on your radar. DuckDuckGo. Has anyone heard of it before?
Yes. Yeah.
I am late to this party, clearly. Why are we not using it just yet?
So if you don't like Google, because maybe you think Google are a monopoly, or maybe you don't like the way that they are feeding you with advertising the whole time, or taking your data, or spamming you with crap that you didn't ask for.
Or keeping a record of your cash.
Of your searches, correct? If you don't like that, or you think they're politically on one side, or the other, use DuckDuckGo.
Look, it's going up the ranks.
Let me tell you something. You'll find search results on DuckDuckGo that Google have hidden from you that might end up being exactly what you're looking for.
Yeah, because they're not promoted or SOE.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. DuckDuckGo focuses on returning what it deems to be the best search results rather than the most search results. So I'm surprised that you guys have heard of this. I'm jumping onto this now. It was founded back in 2008 in the US, and it's a search engine. And they push this whole user privacy thing. They even have the tagline privacy simplified. So it has personalized search results and refuses to profile its users. And it sets itself as a more privacy focus alternative to Google search, which famously hovers up user data to inform its ad. And I actually came across it recently when Jack Dorsey of Twitter actually took a little stab at Google by tweeting about DuckDuckGo. He's tweeted, "I love at DuckDuckGo, my default search engine for a while now. The app is even better." So it made me want to just squint at the tweet, though, to go, Jack, are you pushing it for your own agenda, or is this a qualified
Jack
alternative?
Jack Dorsey doing that is inevitably what starts to happen when these tech companies become a little bit snide and snappy with each other, which is kind of it's good news for us, because it's going to mean that they aren't all acting in concert to screw us over.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of DuckDuckGo. I use them all the time. So see, get on the goddamn page.
Look, do you think we're going to get to a point where we're now telegramming as opposed to WhatsApping? Well, then we'll be DuckDuckGoing as opposed to Googling.
I think a lot of people went through that phase, and there's Signal, there's Telegram. There are a lot of different apps you can use that cut out Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
And if you don't like him, and you're prepared to get all of your friends and family to move over to those other apps as well, it's a mission, but it can be done.
And I think it will be done, slowly but surely.
So the kind of mission that it is understand that DuckDuckGo has been around since 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are almost in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
11, 12 years later.
And you, Sia, are still
surprised by it. Still surprised by it. Also then, do you want to know where you'll probably be spending your money next year? Because Apple has Summer revealed some of the new products they'll be unveiling next year.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, here we go. Get your pockets ready. So... it's just going to happen. One of the things that they're planning on releasing is a new iPad Pro with 3D cameras.
Okay. Pumi's got one of those.
Not the one with the 3D camera.
It's just coming now.
But Pumi only uses an iPad. Remember, famously, she had her laptop stolen a long time ago. Yeah, and she's been on only iPad and phones since then. And Pumi, you get as much done, if not more.
Yeah.
You don't have to schlep around your heavy laptop.
I don't miss my laptop. I don't miss my laptop.
So it can be done, because I've heard people doing this, but Pumi's the only living example I have of it. I'm serious.
Well, Apple is planning to release this new version of the iPad Pro next year. It will have two camera sensors and a 3D sensor that will make it possible to create digital reconstructions of the world around you. Sounds fancy, but also sounds like this is they're getting from us.
Sia?
Mm-hmm.
Y'all laughed at me.
Okay.
A good 2 weeks ago when I said to you guys, 2020, it is the future. We're living in the future,
Wait
guys.
Until I get to the bottom of this list. I think minds will be blown. So this whole new version of the iPad Pro is said to be part of Apple's big push into augmented reality. So there are rumors that Apple will also release its first headset, AR headset, in 2021 or 2022. So let's wait for that. Something else that Apple is going to be releasing next year is a new cheap iPhone. Let's use inverted commas with cheap when it comes to Apple, because we just don't know what they mean by that. But the company is reportedly planning to launch a new version of the iPhone SE in 2020. So the original iPhone SE was launched back in 2016. I don't really think it was made that much of a dent in the market, and was significantly cheaper than...
So they are 90% of profits. Is that what you're talking about? Is that the dent we're talking about?
So this new version will reportedly have a 4.7-inch screen, which is very similar to the iPhone 8, and it will run on the same processor as the iPhone 11.
Okay.
Moving on as well, though, expected, they're also going to be releasing an iPhone 12 and iPhone 12 Pro, which may come in two new sizes and also support 5G. So this will be done quite annually around September every year. It's like clockwork.
Yeah.
These new phones will also have new 3D cameras, updated screen sizes for the Pro models, and that's just the only innovation that's been released around the new iPhone.
But there could be more, we never know.
Yeah, but I'm not holding my breath.
But if you want to use your 5G, considering that we're not going to have like our 30 to 50% discount in time in September next year, you might have to move to Egypt.
Exactly. For 5G, because that might be worthy. Like clockwork as well, they'll unveil the new Apple Watch alongside the new iPhone. And the only innovation that's been released thus far around the new Apple Watch is that it will be able to have new sleep tracking technology. Okay, so they're hoping to rival the likes of Fitbit with something like this. Apple has been testing sleep monitoring for the Apple Watch this year and hopes to have the feature ready by 2020. These two are enough to even excite me. So this is
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, these two new products are enough to excite me. I'm not really a techie. I'm not really geeky in that way. I don't even know some of the full capabilities of my phone or my laptop. But this, okay, Apple, yeah, take my money right now. Here's one.
Okay, go.
Apple is rumored to be releasing an accessory. Yeah, I might be so old.
Yes.
They're rumored to be releasing an accessory that will help you find all of your lost Apple items.
Oh, my goodness.
So what, you'll wear a little tag or something and then that'll help you find your stuff that you've lost?
Yes. So these are rumors according to this.
Does that mean I could find my laptop?
All of wrapped in one. Uh-huh. So this device would be similar to the Bluetooth tracker tile and would likely consist of a small tag to be placed on easily misplaced items like your keys and your wallets.
Yeah.
And
so
it would
not
work.
Just your Apple stuff, but anything
your
else.
Your stuff. Oh. Just stuff that you lose all
like
the
you
time.
You can even just tag your child.
Yeah.
Just put it in their shoe or whatever.
Go and play, and then I'll track you next month. Yeah. So it would work with the iPhone's Find My app, and it's unclear when Apple intends to launch this accessory, if at all. But this is exciting. The report suggests that the device would be called AirTags, and it may even use augmented reality to point users toward their lost item.
Okay.
Mm.
I think that's a good innovation.
This is really exciting to me. But I hope this
How many things do you lose, Sia?
It's bad.
Do you think this might be the end to lost socks?
No, that's never going to change. Those are gone forever. There's some secret place all those lost socks
gather.
Gather and they have parties. They laugh at us.
And lost socks are one thing. Have you seen people complain about losing their AirPods?
Oh, all the time.
So this is probably
We knew that was coming, though. When we saw those things, we were all just like...
Yeah.
Mm. But a bit of a personal story, and I hope, Apple, you are listening at this. My friend once had her phone stolen, literally like mugged out of her hands when she was partying once. Mm-hmm. And
at a party.
Well, it was at a club, and she came back to my place, and she's like, I didn't know where else to go. I'm trying to find my phone. Can you help me? We're like, you know what? I'll be a good friend. Fine. And we went in to find my iPhone. We mm-hmm. tapped into it. We started navigating. This is now easily like 3 a.m., so we waited a bit as we were seeing where these robbers were going with the phone, and eventually when the sun started to rise, we're like, great, let's go. It was like 5 a.m., the Find My iPhone tracking navigation eventually led us, though, to a taxi rank in the middle of CBD. Yeah. I parked outside the taxi rank. I was like, Gail, you're on your own. You are not going to go to a taxi rank and have to confront some taxi driver like, hey, there's someone in your taxi who's stolen my phone. I was
I legit thought that it was going to be one of your neighbors. No. I thought that's where the story was going. No. Like it was going to be one of your neighbors. That would have been so cool.
So I just hope Apple is listening to have some more advancements. And this is the last rumor.
Advancements like what? Send a bodyguard.
Latitude, longitude, ID number, blood type, something. This is the last rumored product that they'll release next year. Possibly Apple's first smart glasses.
These have been tried
before. Google.
They've been talking about this. There's a chance Apple could unveil its first pair of smart glasses next year. It is said that they might release it in October, and they're targeting this October 2020 release date for its AR glasses. And that's really all we know about the glasses right now.
Is Sia getting paid for this? Sia, are you getting it?
Yeah, I think he is. All right, I've got a hell of a story for you. Now, you know, we've been talking a little bit about this ongoing Epstein saga and Prince Andrew.
Tell me more.
So, you know the woman who claims that she was trafficked and Prince Andrew had sex with her a couple of times?
Which one?
That is, her name is Virginia Jeffrey. She's appealed to the British public to stand up and fight this fight with her. Do not accept this as being okay. She says that Prince Andrew is ridiculous, but listen to this. Here's where the good stuff comes in.
Uh-oh.
She goes... it didn't last very long, the entire procedure. It wasn't disgusting. He wasn't mean. He said thanks and got out, and I was horrified and ashamed and dirty. The next day, Ghislain, that's Jeffrey Epstein's girlfriend, pats me on the back and says, you did a really good job. You made him really happy. Now, Here's where she gets into some of the real detail.
No.
She uncovered an email sent by Andrew at 5:50 a.m. When some aspects of her court deposition became public. In the email, the prince tells Miss Maxwell, "Let me know when we can talk. Got some specific questions to ask you about Virginia, then Roberts." And then some interesting things come up. She said, "This is not some sordid sex story. This is a story about being trafficked. It's a story of abuse and about royalty." She described her first meeting with Andrew and how they went to the Tramp nightclub, saying that his sweat was like it was raining. He was so sweaty. Goodness. And she was grossed out.
I would classify that kind of information as sordid.
It is. It's revolting. "We went to the VIP section. There was no waiting in line, obviously. You were with a prince. Andrew asked me what I wanted to drink. And I said, oh, you know, something from the bar. He had something clear. I know mine was vodka. And then he asked me to dance. He was the most hideous dancer I've ever seen in my life."
Again, another sordid detail.
"Horrible. And the guy was sweating all over me. Like his sweat, it was basically raining everywhere. I was just grossed out from it, but I knew I had to keep him happy." She added that when she'd left the club, Ms. Maxwell gave her instructions of what to do. She said later that the same night that she had sex with Andrew at Ms. Maxwell's house, in the car, Maxwell told me what I have to do for Andrew, and I have to do what I do for Jeffrey, and that just made me sick. She said Andrew was traveling in another car with his security detail. It's just unreal, these details that are coming through.
Sordid.
Yeah.
It's hectic.
Mm.
But now, you know, we always want to be careful with something like power, right? It's like, but where does the line come when we go, okay, he was sweating on you and you were disgusted and you stayed? Like, where does that, like, if the guy's pouring a bucket of sweat on you, at what point does that become disgusting enough to go, hey, girl, you're better than this? Or does that not happen because there's 50 grand in her bank account?
17 or...
Yeah, power's a difficult thing, right? I mean, I don't want to make it... Yeah, but, jeez.
You know, Mbulelo, there are so many things that are inconceivable to most of us.
Yeah.
But only because we're on the outside.
No, sure. With power, you got to be careful.
And it's, you know, it's like you think power is, he's a prince, she's being trafficked and all of that. But there are so many things about the brokenness of humanity right now that
are being revealed that we're starting to just figure out now.
Like,
yeah.
And from the outside, it's inconceivable. You actually, every part of your brain doesn't have the neural synapses to connect the way that it would for that particular individual. It's crazy.
Funny enough, you know what I think is, it's actually, it's better now. This has always been happening. Power's always been exercised in this sort of brute, but we didn't know. There wasn't this notion of it even having the right to discuss it, right? So I think it might be even, I know it's sick to say it at this time, but I think it's going to get better purely because we can talk about it now. Imagine 100 years ago, you couldn't talk about royal family like this. You couldn't dream of that.
You'd be chased out.
Yeah.
Beheaded. Off with their heads.
Speaking of the royal family, just before we head to our blind history episode for this morning, we thought we'd chat to one of our listeners. Her name is Victoria. She recently reached out to us to give us a glimpse of how her life is actually a version of blind history. And she's on the line now. She's 43 years old. She loves blind history. She was actually named after the English queen. As described by Victoria, a village lunatic, which she'll explain in a second, at a small village in Gasekukune in Limpopo. So, Victoria, how are you? Nice to speak to you.
Good morning, Gareth. Good morning, everybody.
Hey.
Morning.
Hey,
girl. So, Victoria, you got hold of us to tell us that you listen to Blind History, and you've got an interesting story about where your name comes from and a bunch of other things. Tell everybody what you told me in the email.
So basically, this was brought to light or into my forefront when I was listening to you and Anthony discussing how you came about in blind history. And all of a sudden, it sounded very familiar, or like the scene that I used to watch or listen to when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I explained, I come from a small village in Gasekunene in Limpopo.
Mm-hmm.
And my father, for some reason, attracted this eccentric or guy who was considered a lunatic in our village.
This is your dad, right?
Yes, absolutely. So
he was mad.
He had this friend who was one of the villagers, but he was isolated due to his history.
Yeah.
So, but the only person he could stand it seeing was my father. So they will have this fashion where he will sit and regale him with his tales of history. And it was a royal history in Sydney. He knew, like,
Let me just clear this up, because I had it wrong. Your dad was friends with this lunatic, because this loony guy...
Correct, absolutely.
This crazy guy, somehow the only person who he could tolerate and who your dad could tolerate, they were each other. And he would come around and tell stories, and this is where you developed a love for history?
Absolutely. And on the later stage, I was actually named by him when I was born. So this is the queen of our heart. This is Queen Victoria. I was the first born.
So he used to tell you stories, and he was interested in the royal family at that point?
Absolutely, yes. Hmm. Even though it didn't make sense then, because it was such an unfamiliar story, and I was a bit reluctant to be associated with him because of his reputation, which I now regret as an adult. I wish I had given him more time. But yes, that's how I learned about the royal history, the English royal family history.
Amazing. All right, so you listen to Blind History. We've got a hell of an episode for you today on the Kims. Do you know who we're talking about here?
Not really, no.
Yeah, it's Kim Jong-un, Kim Jong-il, and Kim Il-sung.
Oh, that Kim. Yes.
Yeah, not Kim Kardashian.
About them.
All right, Victoria, well, nice to talk to you this morning, and I hope you'll enjoy this episode of Blind History. As always, it's brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. You can find out more about them by going to cliffcentral.com. And remember, they've got a special deal on for everybody who listens to Blind History. Maybe over these holidays, you're going to do a little home decorating. Maybe you'll do some DIY around the house. Maybe you'll need to think about some window dressing. So maybe, just maybe, you should have these guys in mind when you need to order something, when you need to find the right kind of decoration for your windows, the right kind of practical, useful blinds. These are the people to talk to. And you can say that we sent you, and you can get even more reductions on their already good prices. But before we go into any of that stuff, it's time for us to find out about North Korea and this amazing family, the Kims. They are fascinating. If you think the stuff you do know about them is interesting, wait till you hear about the stuff you don't know. All right, here it is. Episode 12. I think this is the final episode, right?
Season 2.
Oh, there's one more. There's one more episode. This is the second last episode of Blind History Season 2. Take a listen to this. When most people hear the name Kim, they think of Kim Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian.
But in North Korea, long before Kim Kardashian broke the internet, three Kims succeeded in breaking everything else, including the internet. This is the story of a dynastic crime family with mysterious origins, bizarre lives, and the launch codes for a vast nuclear arsenal. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Blind History. We're coming to the end of season 2. I'm kind of sad about that because I've enjoyed some of these people, but we've decided for the last 2 episodes to focus on truly horrendous people. But we've batched them together. So we're going to do an episode on the Kims, which are the three, the grandfather, the father, and the son, who've ruled North Korea since 1948. And our last episode will keep a surprise for now. These guys were insane and continue to be insane. They're probably very comparable to some of the worst leaders in history. And the amazing thing is that they're all like within living memory.
And they're going strong still. That's the scary thing. And it's the level of nuttiness hasn't dropped off.
Well, these guys are properly lunatic. I mean, the first one was Kim Il-sung. They call him the great leader. Then his son took over in 1994. He's called the dear leader. And then his son took over in 2011. And he's called the dear respected. So sort of. And by the way, Kim Il-sung, the grandfather, is still the president of the country, even though he's dead.
Eternal.
So as Christopher Hitchens, my favorite author, puts it, you could call North Korea a thanatocracy or a mausolocracy. I'd be ruled by the dead.
I suppose, yeah.
If anyone raises their heads above the parapets, these three have been very quick to have them killed.
Yeah.
And sometimes in pretty barbarous ways.
And also by proxy, which is the scariest thing of all. So that's not only will that particular person get killed, but his whole family or her whole family.
That's right. They make sure there's no stone unturned.
That's why nobody's done anything. It's so scary. I mean, they're too scared to look up.
Well, shall we start at the beginning with Kim Il-sung? He is premier president still, came to power after the end of Japanese rule over the Koreas. That was in 1945. And he then launched an invasion of South Korea in 1950, which became the Korean War, because, of course, the North Koreans were supported by the Soviets. South Korea, which was very much a jumbled up, messed up country at that stage, was supported by the UN, who then declared war on North Korea, and the US took the lead in that war. Obviously, the Korean War was not a great success because it led to a military stalemate, which became a ceasefire in 1953. They established no man's land along that parallel, which is still no man's land. The few brave creatures that have crawled across it have been shot. Ultimately, no one's made it across. And it's become a bit of a nature reserve. Like, nature has regenerated there in interesting ways because no humans can go there. There are interesting trees and birds and animals that have lived there and very undisturbed for the last 50 or 60 years.
But if we look at Kim Il-sung, he probably did the most from a freedom fighter perspective. I mean, the dad, it's his son, and then his grandson, from a military perspective, they were useless. But he was a freedom fighter because there was Japan imperialism, and they had to deal with that, and they hated it, and he hated it.
Yeah.
And then they started catching on to him, so that's where he went to the Soviet Union. And learned all the tricks and then started getting involved with Marxism and Leninism. Yeah. And then Stalin was around. And so actually from that side, he had strong beliefs originally.
Yeah, he was definitely an ideologue and he was definitely someone who believed in implementing stuff, even if people didn't want it.
Yeah,
I mean, he established communism, publicly owned and a public economy, which was planned. It was essentially a form of totalitarianism. They shut themselves off from the rest of the world. It didn't matter what was going on anywhere else. North Koreans have never seen American television. They've never seen a movie. They've never read a newspaper from outside of there. The people of North Korea believe everything that they're told by their government.
Yeah, that's correct.
And everything that they have, they're given by the government. And everything that they used to have has been taken away by that government. So they don't know anything else. It's hermetically sealed off from the world.
It's such a poor country. It's actually very sad. People are dying of starvation while the Kims are skiing down some man-made slopes that they've made. It's horrendous what they're doing there. So the grandfather, as you said, you know, the ever-victorious Generalissimo, as he was also called, he actually got impatient. He wanted the whole peninsula.
Yeah, that's right.
And so he got impatient and he kept pestering Stalin. And Stalin was actually saying, just be patient. And he was getting frustrated.
I mean, imagine Stalin telling you to be patient.
Exactly. I mean, that's, you know, tempered. And ultimately, in the end, that's what he wanted. But the United States didn't come out of that looking great because they were getting knocked around by the North Koreans and the Soviets. And then they brought that napalm out. They killed millions of North Koreans. It was just brutal.
Well, there's a museum in Pyongyang about the evils and the cruelty of the American soldiers. And it's a museum which basically houses some of the horrible and terrible things that America did in photographs and movie and all the rest of it. And they've got like the one plane that the North Koreans managed to capture. And they've got that proudly on display as well. But the whole place is just very weird. For a little while in the 1960s, North Koreans did have a better quality of life than South Koreans. It was mostly because South Korea was very disorganized. It was in constant economic crisis. And the plans that had been put into place were starting to bear fruit for Kim Il-sung. But of course, that all reversed in the 1970s when the Japanese and the US started making investments in South Korea. They had military aid. They had economic stability and development. And from there on, it really got very ugly for the North Koreans. And as you say, there was starvation. People were eating their pets. People were having babies and eating them. I mean, it was not a pretty sight at all. And their assistance from the USSR dried up in the 1990s when that collapsed. And there was a big famine in 94, which was the start of decline there. And it was really where they separated out from the world completely and became this bizarre isolationist state that nobody could really understand.
I think at that time, Kim Il-sung was sick and he was on his last legs. Well, I think he actually died.
I mean, the guy had a big baseball-sized tumor on the back of his neck. True. It was what they called a calcium deposit growth. Yeah. And for photographers...
But nobody there knew about it.
No, because photographers had this really tough job of having to take pictures of him only from the side where you wouldn't see this big ball on the back of his head. So there are, I think there are two or three pictures that managed to make it through that were taken by international press people where you could see this massive ugly growth on the guy's head. But the rest, they had to get up on ladders. They had to stand this far away. They had to wait till he faced that way and then they could take it from here. It was a disaster for this guy. And of course, that wasn't the thing that killed him. Eventually, I think he had a heart attack.
Yeah, I think they both had a heart attack.
The son had one in a fit of rage. He was the guy who developed, you know, all of this ugly Stalinist purge stuff. They would just redistribute land. They'd nationalize healthcare. There was tax collection that involved violence and beatings and imprisonment. They had a system called the Songbun system, which took intellectuals, landowners, and pro-Japanese people and made them go into the most horrible barren northern wastes of North Korea. And then when obviously famine hit, those people would die first.
And then they'd kidnap intellects.
Yes.
Scientists.
They'd kidnap them from Japan
teachers,
or from
wherever,
South Korea or from China or wherever they could
get. To raise the level and to do a job.
Right.
It was hectic. I mean, it was crazy.
So when Kim Il-sung died, they started this 10 days of mourning. Hundreds of thousands of people came for the funeral.
Because they had to?
Yeah. Of course, listen, you don't argue with these guys.
No, he'll be dead.
They put him in a glass coffin in a mausoleum. And when you land in North Korea now as a foreign visitor, you have to go there first to pay your respects. He's still there in his glass coffin. Yeah, they did the same with the son. So he also supposedly is the guy who wrote thousands of operas and many plays, although who really knows whether he wrote any of them.
Apparently it was all the books in the school were written by him.
He was so talented, this guy. I mean, really. And his son took over in 94, the Dear Leader. Now, this guy's probably a little more insane because he didn't have any real life experience. He grew up in this bizarre world that his father had created. But he had the fourth largest standing army on earth when he took over, which is quite scary if you consider that after America, China, and the then USSR or Soviet Russia.
And then North Korea.
Then North Korea.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have done some serious damage if they wanted to.
Just going back to Kim Il-sung and the birth of his son.
Oh.
Mount Paektu is the place where the supposedly, legend has it that all the Koreans have come from, the North Koreans have come from. And this is where the leader, what do we call him?
The Dear Leader.
The Dear Leader.
He was born.
He was born there.
Supposedly, he was born there. At the moment of his birth, a new star formed and illuminated the sky. The season suddenly changed from winter to spring, and a double rainbow appeared over the mountain. Beautiful, and Soviet records paint a far more boring picture, though, that he seems to have been born in 1941 in the Siberian village of Vyatskoye, which is not nearly as exciting.
Yeah, and his name was Uri. They called him Uri.
That's not as grand.
No, it's not as grand. And as he grew up, he was this fantastic ladies' man.
Oh, a fashion icon, first of all.
Yeah.
His fashion took the world by storm, apparently, according to the official North Korean records. The rest of the world knows that he was the greatest fashion icon of all time. He was inspired by Elvis in the 70s, with those big glasses and the, you know, the sort of body suits and that kind of thing, which he obviously wore. And the poofy hair was an Elvis thing. Because he was obsessed with Elvis. He had something like all of Elvis's movies, 20,000 copies of his albums. He collected Elvis memorabilia. And then he had this massive predilection for movies. He was a big movie fan. You know about this.
Yeah.
Do you know who his favorite actor and actress were?
I think Jean-Claude Van Damme was his son.
Well, that's what he said, yeah.
Okay.
But Elizabeth Taylor and Sean Connery were his favorite male and female actress.
Really?
Loved the James Bond movies. Loved Friday the 13th, Rambo, and Godzilla.
Yes, those and they made their own version of Godzilla.
Oh.
The most prominent power couple. She was an actor. He was a producer in South Korea.
Right.
Famous. Even actually in Japan, they were famous.
Okay.
And flying high, perfect marriage, children. Then they fell in a little bit of hard times. They subsequently got divorced. She was, for some strange reason, summoned down to Hong Kong and then disappeared. So the ex-husband was distraught. He went down there. He also disappeared.
Hmm.
And where did they pop up?
North Korea, North Korea.
Exactly. And they helped make the North Korean version of Godzilla.
He invented the hamburger. Did you know about that?
I heard, yes.
Yeah, according to a newspaper in North Korea, so it's totally trustworthy, the leader invented a brand new sandwich and called it double bread with meat. But that was obviously taken by the rest of the world and renamed the hamburger.
Of course.
But he developed it. He was a master golfer.
Yeah, I heard about this? That.
According to his biography, official biography, he first picked up a golf club in 1994. He shot a 38 under par round that included no fewer than 11 holes in one.
Yes, that's amazing. And you know, he's got the resilience, the strength of character not to go and compete on the tour.
Sure, of course.
Because he would have beaten everybody. I mean, he would have won every Open.
Do you know that he never used a toilet?
He didn't defecate or urinate?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
He didn't need to. And he could control the weather too.
But there was obviously one or two things that were leaked. And apparently, he only started talking quite late as a child.
Oh.
And he would lose his temper in school. And then he would have these long sulks.
Hmm.
And he didn't integrate very well with the other kids at school. So that's what the people on the outside said. But obviously, you can't believe that.
No, because we must believe the North Koreans.
Exactly.
They're the only ones who know.
Yeah.
He had a big fear of flying. And he used to travel around in an armored train. Apparently once on this armored train, because money was no object, he had live lobsters airlifted onto the train while it was moving, and he would eat them with silver chopsticks. This is according to his own bodyguards.
Yes.
So tell me about Kim Jong-il and his brother.
What happened was they were swimming in a little lake, and the parents were on the beach, and they were young. He was 6 years old, and the brother was four. And he sort of throttling his brother, and he pushed him under the water. Then the brother tried to come up for air and pushed him down, and he kept him down, kept him down. And then the parents saw and they ran to see what was happening, and they couldn't resuscitate him. He killed him.
So he, at a young age, he killed
his brother. 6 years old, and he had a smirk on his face.
Well, that's how good dictators start, right?
I mean, he must have made his father very proud.
Powerful.
Exactly. So that was an auspicious start for our friend.
He also wanted doctors to make him live forever.
He said, I want to live to 120.
Okay.
And so he got doctors. That was a full-time job for them. They introduced a whole lot of different medicines and plants and all the things to improve his age. But they were working against somebody that loved to smoke and drink heavily.
Mm.
And so they were, and then he died quite, you know, reasonably young.
Yeah.
So they were put in a concentration camp because they obviously didn't achieve what they had to achieve.
The only thing that he ate from outside of North Korea, because most of his food, he only trusted North Korea, despite them not having a whole lot of food, was French wine. The only thing he would indulge in was French wine. He had 17 palaces that he lived in. One was a resort you mentioned already. They would make these slopes for them to ski down. One was a little house on the beach, very pretty. But they were all covered in huge acres of barbed wire. And there were, like, you know, places where they could take direct hits from bombs and all kinds of stuff. So they
and nuclear, yeah, exactly, nuclear weapons. So they had a bunker. Kits it out with everything.
Apparently, Kim Jong-il had $4 billion in Luxembourg banks in case he was ever forced to flee North Korea so that he wouldn't have to run out of money.
And that country was bankrupt. It was so sad. When he took over in 1994, that was the worst famine in North Korea over those 4 years.
When he died, during his death, apparently a fierce snowstorm stopped, took a pause, and the sky glowed red. And the ice on a big lake cracked and shook the heavens and the earth. I mean, sounds quite dramatic. Probably nothing happened.
But that makes sense, I mean, because he decided to move the weather around a little bit. But what was interesting is he got a little bit frustrated where he kept tripping over his young son's bottle of whiskies. His empty bottle of whiskies lying around in the palaces.
So that's why he died of a heart attack and full of rage, because of these bottles of whiskey that were lying around. So what about the youngest one?
He had his own Mercedes when he was 7 years old.
Kim Jong-un.
Yes.
Seven years old.
7 years old. Fujimoto, he was actually the chef of Kim Jong-il.
Yes.
And later he was given the task of playing with Kim Jong-un.
Yes. How did that go?
Well, in the beginning he said it was very stressful. He said when you looked in those eyes, you knew that this guy was as nutty as the rest of the family. But nonetheless, he played with him and he was his minder, and he would travel all over the world actually to get him, because he had a very, very, very particular taste. Yves Saint Laurent cigarettes at the age of 14.
Oh, okay.
Best whiskey you could find. I mean, it wasn't readily available down at the shop, so he had to go and fly and get it. But he had to sit next to him while this young seven-year-old drove the Mercedes. It was the worst experience you could ever imagine.
But he had a hell of a car collection, right?
He had a massive car collection. He still has.
Yeah. And he's inherited all those palaces and all that money as well.
What he's done a little bit different is he's put train stations underneath that joins all the different palaces, tunnels and train stations. So he's connected.
He's really spending the public money well.
Yeah, wonderfully.
It's great.
But what he has done, he's built Pyongyang up. There's a certain street that's now got all these boutique stores.
Oh.
And massive apartment buildings. So he's invested. He's actually invested quite a bit in 2013 onwards. But it's for the elite rich. Because the people are still struggling. I mean, it's the same old, same old.
Have you ever seen those medals that those generals have? Sometimes the medals go all the way onto the jacket, and then they have to go onto the pant legs as well, because they run out of space for all of their medals.
All the medals. And what were the medals for?
Yeah. Well, small skirmishes.
Maybe killing the uncle.
Well, you know what he tried to do with his uncle? His uncle was seemingly making moves to have him ousted, and he found out about it. And he ordered his uncle killed, but not just killed. He ordered him blown up by a rocket. A rocket-propelled grenade was fired at him at close quarters.
I did read that. It's point-blank range. I mean, couldn't miss.
It's just horrendous. Lots of human rights abuses continue. And obviously, they've made that movie, The Dictator, which didn't go down very well. It was almost caused a diplomatic incident. North Korea is known to have tried to hack into various places, including Sony Pictures in Los Angeles, which they did successfully and embarrassed a whole lot of actors and movie directors and all the rest. But that's not even the end of these people. He's now best friends with Donald Trump.
But he's got nuclear weapons. He's got a strategy. He's actually got good, better, best. In other words, you can take out a city, then you can take out a town, then you can take out a small village, then you can take out a building, then you can take out one or two people. So he's taken it to a complete new level. And then he just pops, shoots them off every now and then on Independence Day. American Independence Day, shoots it into the Japanese Sea. A nuclear weapon. Another,
yeah. And then there's a diplomatic incident.
Exactly.
But they do say that he hasn't got the capabilities to actually launch these missiles. While the missiles may be nuclear and they may be able to do huge damage, the actual transportation device is no good. So they keep firing them up and then they come fizzling down.
Which is good for us to know.
I think so. Good for everyone.
He's unhinged.
Yeah.
You know, he could just wake up one day after a couple of bottles of whiskey and say, well, I want to blow up Seattle.
And he probably, if he had the capabilities, might press that button.
Yeah.
But he's friends with Donald, so.
Yeah, and you know, Donald's very level-headed, so we're all safe.
He's not capricious at all.
Exactly.
The Kims, a very fascinating family, and we hope that somewhere in the not-too-distant future, they're also consigned to the annals of history rather than the present. Thanks for listening to the award-winning Blind History, brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. CliffCentral.com